It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And as always, good afternoon to you, gentlemen. Cecil, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
And Wes, likewise, good afternoon to you as well.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Lockwood.
Well, Lockwood, Wes, and I are pleased to be with you this afternoon. We always are. We always enjoy our time with you. Wes and I would like to talk to you, Lockwood, about power of attorney or agency fiduciary duty. Mm-hmm. Those are some big words, but I have a lot of these cases, a lot of questions. Had one just yesterday, and it frames up like this. One of the family members has been appointed under a durable power of attorney, the agent of their elder parent, and they have taken control of paying the bills and handling the finances and things of that nature. And yet, other members of the family are concerned about whether there's been or whether there is self-dealing.
Mm-hmm.
Cars or maybe a vehicle maybe is being sold to the agent for a reduced value. Accounts maybe at the bank, the designated beneficiaries have been changed, payable on death. Different things are happening under the auspices of a durable power of attorney agency relationship that other members of the family are concerned about. And so these cases kind of frame up for Wes and myself. And I'm going to be real interested in what Wes has to say, but a lot of times this is kind of a situation, Lockwood, of and I know Wes will agree, of a wait and see. It's not a very comfortable position for the family to be in because, you know, we really can't alter the power of attorney unless there's been something very egregious, very significant. Mm-hmm. Now, at that point, Wes can come in and file a lawsuit to stop the shenanigans and maybe set aside the power of attorney and bring the transparency to the table. But if it's small things like just getting rid of personal property, selling vehicles off for, you know, less than the right price, suspicion that accounts are being changed, no verification of that, then we're in a little bit of a different situation there. So let me let Wes chime in and talk a little bit about this. But some of this is a bit of a wait and see, Lockwood, if I'm making sense, because we can't haul off and file a lawsuit just on a whim or on a suspicion that our family member is abusing the auspices of the power of attorney.
Wes, that sounds to me like a definite issue of little research necessary to prove that sort of thing. And again, we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And very quickly, let me remind you, don't hesitate to give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. Wes, what kind of situations does this put you as an attorney in?
Right. So this is a fairly common, situation where you have family members concerned about the actions, sometimes the inactions of the designated agent under a power of attorney. And, in the event that the person, let me kind of just break this down just a couple more steps. In the event that the person who's concerned about the use of the power of attorney is the person who signed the power of attorney, which is not the fact scenario that Cecil set forward.
Mm-hmm.
But then, that dealing with that is easier to deal with from a legal perspective because, the principal can just revoke the power of attorney and put a new person in place.
Right.
So that person would have standing to do that. But in many cases, you're not dealing with the parent who's signed the power of attorney. You're dealing with maybe the siblings,
mm-hmm.
children, the other people who would, benefit, be beneficiaries upon the death of the principal for many reasons. that's just the way it kind of the dynamic works in many cases. And in some cases, you're not dealing with the principal because the principal is elderly, and they're at a point in their life where they can't change the power of attorney, like Cecil mentioned. They don't have the capacity to make a change. Mm-hmm. So then we get into the issue of, okay, what can we do about it? And that's really the fact scenario that Cecil just set forward. When the folks who are consulting with the attorney, us, would be the siblings or the children of the principal. Well, that squarely directs us into a standing issue. Like, what is the legal procedure, you know, to deal with this? How can we deal with this? Well, I agree with Cecil. It's in many cases a wait-and-see situation because the siblings don't have the right, they don't have the standing to go bring an action to challenge a power of attorney during the life of the principal or challenge the acts under a power of attorney, because really what our cases say with regard to that is that, you know, these siblings, these children of the principal, they don't have a guarantee of an inheritance. Okay. What they have is maybe an expectation, but just because they may receive an inheritance at some point in time and their inheritance is being squandered in some way by this use of this power of attorney, that doesn't give them standing to go sue on behalf of, you know, their mother or their father to challenge the actions of the power of attorney. So you run squarely into a standing issue. So, okay, well, it seems like you would be able to do something about that, though, right, Lockwood? Mm-hmm. It seems right. Like it would be if you have the power of attorney who is squandering away money, or, you know, even using the power of attorney to maybe even change accounts into their name or into joint in their name, so that upon the death of mom or dad, then the money passes all to them, or some of the things that we see. Well, that squarely directs us into a guardianship. That's where you have to go with that.
In spite of the fact that these are still members of the family, they are based on the procedure of the durable power of attorney. They then are just simply extraneous to that, and that's the reason why they do not have a standing. Am I understanding? I'm trying to. It just surprised me when you told me that the family doesn't have standing in this particular case. But it's because is it because the durable power of attorney is a unique unit, and therefore they are outside of that unit?
Well, before we go there, Lockwood, I think that Wes is just kind of, we're right here at right. The epicenter of the issue that that I was talking about as well, which is what a terrible, let's just call it what it is, what a terrible place for a family to be. As I say, I just had this file here in the last day or two, you know, because they know that things are not all square. Mm-hmm. They're very suspicious. They have some evidence of some minor things, but they've been blocked from getting the bank accounts because they are not on the bank account. Mm-hmm. The power of attorney is on the bank account. They can't go in and get their elder parents' bank account. Now, Wes mentioned about the principal changing their power of attorney, and that's always possible. But in this situation, the elder parent is not competent to change the power of attorney.
Right.
So Wes might be right on it in terms of saying that maybe what we're going to have to do in this file is, you know, to get transparency, is to file a guardianship, and that would bring all of the paperwork and all of the bank accounts and things of that nature to the forefront. But just to pause for a minute, Lockwood, which is kind of what I wanted to do so our listeners could catch up in their thinking, you know, you can see where this is a real predicament for a family.
Oh my goodness!
Now let's go back now, Lockwood, to your question to Wes, which is that, well, tell me a little bit more about this quote standing issue.
Yes.
Why would this brother and sister not have standing to do something right now in order to stop their sibling from potentially, we don't have evidence, but right. or only suspicion, but from potentially harming their parent.
Wes?
Right. Right. So, yeah, I mean, Lockwood, back to your question, it really is that the law sees them as somewhat of a, you know, outsider in this right. relationship. I mean, what vested interest, when I say vested, I mean current vested interest mm-hmm. do they have from a financial standpoint of the actions of the power of attorney as it relates to their mother or their father? Mm-hmm. Well, in the eyes of the law, our Court of Appeals and our Supreme Court has said that, well, that interest of an expectation of an inheritance is not a vested interest, it's an expectation. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't put you in a position where you can bring an instant action during the life of the principal and, you know, bring a lawsuit, okay, that, you know, my sister Janie or whatever her name would be went and did this with this account and we learned about it and that's a breach of her duty and we want the power of attorney to be set aside. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't even bring an action during the lifetime of the principal, in most cases the parent, to set aside the power of attorney because you say it was signed when the mother, the father, the principal, didn't have capacity mm-hmm. or was under undue influence. You can't do that. You don't have the right to do it. You don't have the standing to do it. And generally what our cases say is because even though, let's say mom or dad has a will and you're named a beneficiary under the will, and therefore you're trying to connect the dots to, well, look, you're squandering away my inheritance. Well, what the cases say is mom or dad, even if they, you know, have a power of attorney, I mean, they can change their will anytime they want to. You may not ever receive anything. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the right to bring that claim. But, you know, there is guardianship to the rescue. I mean, the guardianship is the correct tool to use. So we would have to file a guardianship proceeding. Now, you understand we're not necessarily in a position where mom or dad is incompetent. It may just be that the brother or sister is acting in a way that we disagree with.
Right.
If mom or dad's not really incompetent or not really, you know, showing lack of capacity because of whatever reason, it could be for anything, but, you know, normally with elderly folks, it's going to be a dementia, Alzheimer's, or something like mm-hmm. that.
Right.
Or, you know, diminished memory, those type things, lack of, you know,
capacity,
ability, executive function, you know, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you may not really be able to, in good faith, proceed with a guardianship if they don't, you know, have that presentation. But that's the remedy. And when you file the guardianship, what you're asking the court to do is make a determination that, you know, mom or dad, whoever you say is whoever's the respondent, the person who signed the power of attorney, is being taken advantage of. You're saying that they lack capacity to be able to handle their affairs and protect themselves. And during that process, we can conduct some discovery, get bank records, medical records, you know, those type things, and bring some transparency to the situation. And in the event that let's say the children who are named the guardian, if it comes to that, are someone other than the power of attorney, then they can at that point in time go challenge the acts of the power of attorney, because what have we done? We stepped into the shoes of the principal then.
Okay, that's a question I wanted to go to here. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, and by the way, I want to remind you, the number 252, area code 726-9050, or go online to Harvell and Collins, spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. We're talking about the issue of durable power of a trust and an alternative for those who may find themselves in disagreement with how the durable power of a trust is being handled, can seek a guardianship. Wes, I want to go to that issue. Okay, so I'm dissatisfied with how my sibling is handling the durable power of a trust and is squandering the money or abusing it in some fashion. What is the procedure for me to require or to seek an issue of guardianship? What do I do? How do I go about doing something of that nature?
Right. Well, original jurisdiction is with the clerk of court. I would recommend certainly having an attorney that deals in these issues.
That's an understatement.
Think if you don't deal with a durable power of attorney like this and these type of issues and filing a guardianship, there are lots of details here and there in the statute that can really help you or can hurt you if you don't have competent legal counsel to help guide you through that. Jurisdiction would be where the respondent or the parent generally resides. So that would be the county in which it would be filed. And then once that's filed, there's service, you know, everyone gets served so that, you know, there's an opportunity for folks to come forward and speak their mind with regard to, you know, whatever the issues are. And there's a right, you know, there'll be a guardian ad litem appointed, someone who is kind of a protector of the respondent, who's the parent in this scenario. We'd be able to, like I said, go through the process of conducting some discovery or maybe get a court order to require an analysis of the parent from a medical standpoint to potentially be able to get bank records so we can have some transparency with regard to how, you know, the actions of the power of attorney. So the guardianship really is, in the most basic sense, the guardianship isn't all these things I just went through. It's not getting the records. It's not necessarily getting a medical evaluation. It's not, you know, getting medical records and bank records. It's, in the most basic sense, it's a relatively, I wouldn't say simple, but it's fewer steps of the court making a determination as to the person and whether they're incompetent and who the guardian is.
Okay.
However, there are details in the guardianship statutes that would allow a well-represented person, someone who has a good attorney and knows what they're doing, to be able to really bring full transparency to the entire situation that you have concern with. So that you're able to use those statutory powers by filing motions with the court and asking for things to bring, you know, transparency, you know, to the case. So there are all kinds of guardianships. Sometimes the guardianships are relatively, I don't want to use the word simple, but they're quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then sometimes the guardianships are more of a, well, we've got to use these processes to under the statutes to bring transparency to the whole thing. Otherwise, we can't really prove our case as it relates to our strong suspicion that this brother or sister or power or could be caregiver, whoever it is misusing this power of attorney. Okay, so we've got to have the bank records. We've got to have, you know, even medical records as it relates to when they signed the power of attorney. You know, did they sign this power of attorney, you know, 5 months ago? Okay, fine. We don't think mom was doing very well at that point in time. Well, the person who's the agent of the power of attorney probably would say, oh, she was doing great. Mm-hmm. Well, was she going to the doctor at that point in time? Okay, what doctor was she going to? What do the records show? Did she have any kind of mental examination at that point in time? Did the medical records indicate that she had any kind of dementia presentation? Did it indicate that she had, you know, capacity? 3 out of 3 capacity. Did it show that she was that maybe the daughter or the son, whoever the power of attorney is, was at the meeting and said something about mom being forgetful and not being able to deal with her affairs anymore? I mean, you know, let's bring some transparency to this entire process. And again, the guardianship statutes allow us, to do that if you utilize them properly. It's not going to be that if you file a petition for adjudication of incompetence and appointment of a guardian, that's the name of the process, then all of a sudden all of these things are going to come from the sky. They're not going to just fall from the sky. This evidence is not going to fall in your lap. Right. You have to file the appropriate motions, have the appropriate hearings, get the appropriate orders put in place. Then you have to execute on those orders, by providing the orders for production of documents, to the banks, to the medical providers, all of these processes in order to build all of the evidence that you need in order to bring transparency, to the situation. But that kind of brings us full circle to the point that it under this scenario, that is squarely the procedure you have to follow.
Wow.
Because you have to eventually step into the shoes of mom or dad under this scenario. You have to step into their shoes if you're going to go challenge the power of attorney. And I would finally say with regard to this would be that the clerk of court also through the guardianship has the authority to revoke the power of attorney.
Oh, really?
So it's not as if you have to go back to court, file a lawsuit, for purposes of trying to have the power of attorney revoked because of lack of capacity at the time of signing or undue influence. No, the clerk of court can consider all that and can revoke the power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Lockwood, I think a real good place to conclude is with this. Let's kind of take this full circle and go up the ladder a little bit. What we're talking about, Lockwood, is breach of fiduciary duty.
Uh-huh.
A agent under a power of attorney, our power of attorney, if you will, our attorney, in fact, it's all the same thing, is a fiduciary, one who is holding and managing property for another. Now, a fiduciary can be an executor. A fiduciary can be already a guardian, and a guardian under a pending guardianship is a fiduciary, a trustee under a trust. All of these folks are fiduciaries, and so these very same facts that we've been talking about this morning, we have a file in our office right now where there was a pending guardianship. There was a guardian appointed pursuant to the clerk of court, but guess what? Family members felt that this guardian was abusing her fiduciary duty under the guardianship.
Uh-huh.
And so they have challenged the accounting of the guardianship. We have any number of files in our office where we have executors who have qualified as the executor. They are, in fact, the fiduciary, but yet we're handling cases in our office where the family believes that the executor is acting outside the scope of their executorship, that they are breaching their fiduciary duty. And then we have cases where the trustee, who is a fiduciary, is breaching, the family believes that they have or are breaching their fiduciary duty. So the same concepts of law, the same, case law, if you will, is applying to all of these, whether or not it's a power of attorney, whether or not it's an executor, whether or not it's a guardian, whether or not it's a trustee. The body of law is basically fiduciary law, and what we've been talking about this morning is a breach of fiduciary responsibility as it relates to a power of attorney. But being a fiduciary, an executor, trustee, power of attorney, guardian, is a very serious title.
Right.
And you have to act with the utmost of care in the way in which you are handling other people's monies and property. It's a fascinating area of law, isn't it, Lockwood?
It is. And the question it leads me to ask before we wrap it up, and that, of course, this is an important issue. We've talked about numerous instances, particularly of estate management and estate planning. And, of course, not only is it the financial issue, it's the emotional issue as well. And I know that you are dealing with that. I can imagine that without any question. My final question to you is, okay, so in my case, as I'm setting up my estate, and I say that to anyone, is there a way to sort of ameliorate, if you can't solve it exactly, but some way to sort of, and I say ameliorate, the potential of these kind of conflicts? Is there a possibility? Is there some sort of structure that you would recommend? And of course, each situation would be a little different, but is there a possibility of kind of softening the potential of these kind of conflicts?
To me, it's up to the person who is serving under the power of attorney. They can very easily avoid conflict by just talking with the sibling
and being transparent.
And having some frank conversation, even providing bank records,
mm-hmm.
whatever it may be that we have concern about, let's have some transparency and some conversation. And in the event that, you know, everything is on the up and up, well, the power of attorney should have no problem showing us if it's on the up and up.
Okay.
But in the event that they are not willing to have the conversation, in most cases, I mean, like almost 100% of the cases, that is a cover-up for
right.
something that they're doing to benefit themselves. So, yes, I mean, we try to have conversation before we go down the path of these, you know, these situations, but in many cases, the family's already tried that by the time they've come to meet with us, and it's failed.
Mm.
So, and this is like rings true for all of our situations. I mean, it doesn't matter what kind of case we deal with. You know, I can't say 100% because in some situations it makes sense to go ahead and file whatever your action is without having a conversation.
Right.
It just depends on what the circumstance is. But in this type of situation, when it's a family, you know, and you've got a family member, if that's the situation, who's acting under a power of attorney, and we don't think they're acting appropriately, then certainly, you know, attempting to talk amongst the family is advisable before we go down the path of a guardianship or whatever the process you know, would be under the particular circumstances.
Is it possible to create co-trustees or in this case, power? We got a durable power of attorney. Is there a possibility of creating two identified members that have responsibility? Is that an alternative?
Absolutely it is. And then if that were the case and one were acting inappropriately, the
right.
other would have standing
okay.
to bring the lawsuit because they're on the power of attorney.
Okay. All right. Yeah. What I'm trying to imagine for anyone listening to the program, and again, we're talking with, that was Wes Collins, but Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins, we're talking about the issue of durable power of attorneys and the difficulties experienced by family members should they feel dissatisfied. And to me, Wes, Cecil, this is sort of a statement to those listening, an alternative that they may want to consider. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's something that could be considered at the, you know, the estate planning stage. You know, obviously when you sit down with the attorney and mm-hmm. discuss who is to be the attorney in fact or the agent under the power of attorney. There are pros and cons with that as well. I mean, sometimes families just don't have, you know, the two people that they trust to serve
right.
in that role.
Yeah.
There is maybe, you know, we can go through that maybe in another
yeah.
program.
We can. There has to be a lot of conversation, Lockwood, in all of our conferences about who is this magic person.
Right.
We at our office, kind of our paralegals call it the perfect child. They'll come in and they'll say, Cecil, who's the perfect child in this file? Meaning, who is the
right.
fiduciary? Who's the power of attorney? Who is the executor? Who is the trustee?
Okay.
Well, of course, we know there is no perfect anybody, including me and everybody else in the world. But the bottom line is that there's conversation about these issues. And
okay.
then keep in mind, sometimes we can have co-powers of attorney. We can have co-agents. I know we're out of time, but sometimes the family member will want to choose a non-member of
right.
the family.
Right.
So it just depends on the circumstances. Yeah.
All right. I want to thank both of you for this program this afternoon. This is very important. And again, the purpose of it is to not only remind you about the quality of representation you will get from the folks at Harvell and Collins, but also to prepare you for those kind of questions that you may want to ask when you visit Harvell and Collins. And again, the number 252 area code 726-9050, and go online to harvellandcollins.com. Cecil, Wes, thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Lockwood.